These are good. This peach mango fucking thing's good.
Yeah, I think it was expensive.
It's, well, of course it is. It's pretentious as hell. It's called a social tonic.
Yeah.
Just call it a drink, you fucking alien.
I didn't make it.
I'm not talking to you.
Hey-o.
Or did you make it? Is this how you soft launch your new brand?
Where the fuck would I make any drink? Where can I do that?
I actually am saying this without joking. I know a guy. I think I know 6 different places that could manufacture a drink for you.
Welcome to the Survivor Turning Back Time podcast, the only Survivor podcast that has a super secret surprise twist for you. It's a mercy killing.
Jesus Christ.
I am your host, Stephen Levine, with my co-host, Jared Sheldon. Jared, caught you off guard with that, didn't I?
Yeah. Wow, what a nothing twist, huh?
You know, they wanted to say, you know what, just let's get to the part where you eat each other.
So I said this...
Oh, by the way, here's your notebook.
I thought... Okay, I knew it. I had to take notes in my director's notebook. I mean, I was down to 2 pages anyway. I said this right before we started recording. I'm going to say it again now that we are recording. We have committed to watching every single episode minus some recaps because those aren't episodes.
Sure.
This is the first one in a very long time I've been like, wow, we could have skipped this and it would have meant nothing.
But Jared, then you would miss such excitement as log roll, cake.
Rehashing drama that resolved episodes ago. Like, my favorite
God, part... why won't you let me die?
Well, that was legitimately funny. The most important thing that happens this episode in terms of drama is a hypothetical of what if Matt comes back and then Andrea realigns with him.
Uh-huh.
Despite the fact that they, depending on when that is, they wouldn't have the numbers for it to matter anyway.
Sure.
Matt would just get voted out again.
You don't have the votes.
And like, there's so little drama in anybody doing anything that's it. That's all they had to show us.
It's nice that, well...
This might be one of the worst episodes of Survivor I can remember seeing, at least since the, like, single-digit seasons.
Okay. I don't know where to go with that, because, like, I can't argue with it. It's a pretty much nothing burger.
Yeah, for non, like, ew, this episode made me feel bad episodes, this is one of the worst ones. I mean, Rice Wars might be worse, but that's a different kind of bad.
Yeah, for non-crime related episodes.
Yeah, or
which just, we're not done with.
Oh God. But non like ugliness. Like yeah. There's nothing like petty or mean or gross. It's just like, okay, sure.
I can add some petty, mean, or gross if you want.
Those are my 3 best friends. Petty, mean, and gross. Actually, that's a law firm. Petty, mean, and gross, brothers at law.
Brothers at law. We'll fight for you.
Anyway, Stephen, how are you?
I'm doing all right, Jared. I don't know. This week has been a particular challenge with my coworker on vacation.
Ah, yes.
And so I am literally just a department of one right now, and I am feeling it.
Steven stands alone.
The amount of stairs and just walking that I have done, and the amount of not my own work that I have done.
See, I wouldn't have thought that... If other people were out of the office, the number one thing you'd mention as a challenge would be stairs.
Well, it's because I'm facilities and we're in a multi-level building.
Marketing scheme? Oh, okay.
Not marketing scheme. We're in a, like, we have multiple floors. So I'm usually on one floor for most of the time, and I take care of that floor. But with other people gone and other people preoccupied, I have the entire space that I have to take care of. Which makes Steven a tired boy.
Yeah, man, that's wrong on so many levels.
I will throw things at you.
Yeah. I'm on one today. I've had the last since we last recorded, it's been jam-packed in my schedule of, like, I mean, we're recording this the day before it comes out, so we have to do the record, quickly edit turnaround.
Yeah. What's this wee business?
Okay.
I've
done it on a Sunday before.
Yeah.
I will say that could be attributing to my feelings of this is a bad episode, but I don't think it is. Generally, I like look forward to that as a break, and then I was just like, oh man, this episode's fucking dragging. But mostly like Black Cat stuff. We had Church Hurt. You came and saw it.
It did.
It was a pretty full house. I was kind of surprised.
It was, and I say this not lightly, probably the best show that you've done yet.
That cannot be true.
And it wasn't even a full production.
Oh, that feels bad.
No, don't feel bad. I think from my like script portion, I think it was very well done.
Fair enough. You sat down here at a microphone and went, hey, Jared, the first thing for the company you haven't directed is the best thing I've seen.
No, the first thing. Okay, jeez.
It's fine. No, I'm mostly fucking with you because it's like a developmental reading is a very different scope than any, like, you know, a full length show, for example.
You also have different challenges and different things that you can, like, shortcut.
Yeah, and Bryn Frauenhofer is a fucking amazing playwright.
Yeah. I am excited to see where it goes from there.
She has a show going up at City Lit sometime this year. It's in this next season.
Lit.
What she's really good at, is, at least from what I understand, I actually haven't read any of her other work yet. I just trust our literary manager, is she takes like little microcosms or like microcultures.
Microaggressions?
No.
Oh.
Microcultures and like gets deep into them. So like the one that's going up at City Lit is about the live magic industry because she worked at the Magic Lounge for a while.
Oh shit.
And like Church Hurt was obviously about like, it was about religion and Christianity specifically, but it was like hyper focused on like liberal, well, or like seemingly liberal, well-meaning, somewhat wealthier churches.
Uh-huh.
Like that's the time and place she set it in. So, oh, it's cool.
Yeah, I thought it was really good.
She's amazing. But yeah, then just a million other things. Hopefully we'll have a Untitled Hamlet play cast soon.
Nice. Yeah, I also have just had something every night this week. So, and I continue to as the week goes on.
As we sit here.
Tomorrow, right now. I Mr. Monopoly too close to the sun.
What? I mean, I know you're being Mr. Monopoly, but what do you mean?
Oh, I load up on my fake mustache and I trounce around a room and annoy people. It's my job.
Right, but like, is this a hobby? Are you doing this at the train station? Like, do you want to say anything else beyond I'm going to go annoy people in a fake mustache?
Nah, it's for a fundraiser.
Okay.
Yeah, that's about it.
Sure.
You know what's not it? Emails. If you want to email us, feel free to do so. SurvivorTBT@gmail.com, or you can message us on Reddit, u/SurvivorTBT. Follow us on Patreon. Give us your money and we'll give you episodes. But speaking of, before we get into that,
yeah, we need to spin the wheel, huh?
We got a wheel to spin. We got new additions since last time, so let's see what happens. I love that you always go the like Price is Right stuff.
Have to. The Conversation.
The Conversation. A Gene Hackman
movie.
Interesting. All right. We're getting like deep into movie scope land.
Yeah. I like Gene Hackman.
Yeah. Thank you, Bro My God. We will jump into The Conversation. But now, a conversation about your emails.
A conversation through emails.
First email from Brittany. Season 22 post-merge. Hey guys, Jared, now you're getting into the post-merge, and most start to see what other people have said about season 22. Way back when, I said not necessarily to worry about the early 20s. Opinions differ, because I personally like several of them. I think a few of the dark age seasons are bad viewed as survivor seasons, and cool viewed as other types of storytelling. Someone else mentioned Nicaragua as Looney Tunes.
Yep.
Fair enough. But I also saw that Knight of King Arthur's journey that I talked about for Fabio, if they hadn't buried it. If this season proceeds like Rob wants it to, it will be a bad season of gameplay. I don't know. Like, it depends on how you look at it. Like, if he just, like, leads these people to slaughter.
I mean, yeah. So far, Boston Rob is playing the game really well. At least we think so.
Yeah.
And Philip is clearly playing the game incredibly poorly, and I think probably has motivations other than winning. I think that we've shifted to the point where Philip, and maybe have been here the whole time, just kind of wants to be on TV. I know that's what some listeners have said. That is the impression I'm starting to get too. The other people in the Ometepe Alliance, the next couple of episodes determine a lot about how I will feel about how they've played the game, because so far they have not had a reason. Their interests have aligned with Boston Rob's. We'll see how it goes from there.
Yeah. He's building a little nonviolent authoritarian society, a secular cult. Why do people go for that? They make choices that don't revolve around idols or vote splits or around Rob's power versus self-interest versus stronger morality. It is so meaty. Yeah, just want some storytelling. Give us some storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, there is a story this season. It's just kind of an ugly story right now, at least post-merge. The story is Ometepe's in charge. They are the prison guards. And Zapatera are the prisoners, and we're doing the Stanford prison experiment. Great. Like, that's the story. And it's not poorly executed, but, man, it's brutal to watch. I know you said, like, it's best viewed as the Dark Age seasons, as not being Survivor. When you don't view them as Survivor, they're better. But, like, I came to watch Survivor. So...
I was told this is Survivor.
I'm going to do my best, but, boy. So, right now, this season... on vibes from like the pre-merge went from being like hovering around like middle to maybe even like upper middle, like maybe like up to like top third, down to like, if the trajectory continues of these last two episodes, being a like bottom three season for me.
And nothing can go wrong.
It's all gone wrong.
No. Okay. From Abigail. Greetings from technically Chicago. That's funny.
Chicago land, as we call it.
Hi, Stephen and Jared. I just landed in Chicago after a long and arduous flight from Champaign. Just kidding, it was like 20 minutes.
Yeah, okay.
I'm on layover here for a bit, so I thought I'd pass the time by writing you an email.
So that was a three-person airplane, is what I'm hearing.
Thoughts on Redemption Island. I love those kinds of airports, because you're like, I don't know, we're all going to one place, but does it really matter?
The TSA guy is named Paul, and he's just a dude that has worked there for 40 years.
What's the smallest airport you've flown out of?
Kalamazoo, Michigan.
Mm.
And even that, like, that's small, but, like, I don't know. I've lived in Chicago for the last 8 years. Why would I fly out of anywhere else?
Right, right.
9 years. I'm getting old, Steven.
It only gets worse, Jared.
That's what they say.
It only gets worse.
Better than the alternative.
Thoughts on Redemption Island? I binged this season in a single weekend, and I absolutely hate it. I was surprised when Jared said he liked it, but I suppose Philip goes down smoother when you're not force-fed his shenanigans over a very short period of time.
I'm so sick of him at this point.
That said, watching Jared change his opinion on Philip and maybe the season? I mean...
Here we are.
Has been satisfying. Can't wait to see him learn the end of David's story is...
Oh, yeah. Oh, the thing that I haven't on the said. Season. Yeah, uh-huh. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep, yep.
Non-Redemption Island thoughts. Did I hear Jared call Aris normal? The guy who tried to get his tribe to harness their power to manifest fire is normal?
Oh, yeah, I forgot about all that.
I guess when you're standing next to Shane and Courtney, you look sane.
Honestly, yes. Yes. He was surrounded by Shane, Courtney, Bruce. Like, yeah, man, he didn't stick out as an oddball.
I recently got very drunk and watched Bruce Medevac and Cerie's 3-2-1 vote in Panama. Panama's a great season to watch while intoxicated.
Yeah, no, that's real.
That's all for now. And then notes a clip of previous player in the season 50 premiere. At the beginning of 50, they did like a montage of previous big moments.
Okay.
And like a few of them that didn't make a ton of sense.
Is it because it's players that are in 50 only?
No, not necessarily.
Okay.
I don't actually feel bad sharing this because this person doesn't come back. They included a clip of Lisi eating shit in the opening montage.
From Fiji?
Yeah.
That's, what? Someone who's never come back and wasn't that important on the season and didn't really have like a, it's not like she was like a fan favorite. Like she kind of sucked.
It truly is a celebration of the show. Amazing.
Wow. So Paramount Plus ads. Oh, first of all, thank you, Abigail. Paramount Plus ads for Survivor 50 are starting to show up everywhere. Like not just on Paramount Plus, like I'm starting to get them on Hulu too. So I hear Jeff go, "This is Survivor 50. And I have to rush for the remote to mute it and then look at my phone so I don't see anything that's going on, which is really annoying. And I want them to stop advertising the season.
Stop doing this. I don't want to know.
Thankfully, the only thing I've heard is that is Colby's voice in one confessional. Mm. And I already knew Colby was coming back. So I've there's nothing there.
There's nothing there. Okay. Moving on to Michael. Michael C's email. The gang has a rice war email. Hi guys, episode 10 is one of my least favorite episodes of all time, and it's not really just due to the fact that it's an episode about race. I work with a majority minority student, so I feel as comfortable as I can as a white male when having those type of conversations with black teens. Where I get uncomfortable is how the show has let it get this far to the point. Personal possessions are being taken and physical violence is being threatened.
Yep.
It's just not what I want to see in Survivor.
Nope.
Like, drama is rad, but this is beyond the pale of typical Survivor drama. And unfortunately, it's not the end of icky things we will see during this era of the show. As I think they're really leaning into the shock factor of it all.
Yeah, it's the reality TV is creeping in more and more now, and what Survivor values feels like it's changing a little bit. This, remember when we watched that, I don't remember what show it was. It was a reality TV show. Was it The Challenge?
It was probably The Challenge, where they were like drunk and fighting.
Yeah, and they like got in a fist fight in the house.
That was The Challenge.
That's the shit I don't want to see on Survivor. But yet we got really close to it.
I mean, technically we've been close to it before.
Where is he? Well, yeah, but that's off camera.
Yeah. This is one reason I think of this as the start of a darker era for the show. And we haven't even gotten to my personal least favorite season yet, because shockingly, not Redemption Island.
Okay.
All that being said, I think both Philip and Steve had valid points. Clearly what Steve said unleashed some previous trauma, whether historic or personal, that Philip put forth in his reactions. Philip also went too far in what he was saying and fed in some negative biases and stereotypes, which unfortunately can happen when those things become internalized.
Yeah.
Steve also kept calling him crazy even after Philip said that, and we see that in this episode too.
He doubles down on it.
Yeah.
And I understand why Steve wants to do that. It's the wrong instinct, but I think he's doing it because he's like, hey, it's not about that, so I'm going to keep saying it to show how much it's not about that, which is, again, that's the wrong instinct to have.
Yeah, if someone tells you that the language that they are using means something different or traumatizing to them, then don't say it, or continue to say it afterward. It seems like he just didn't say it to him.
No, he said it to his face in the beginning of this episode.
I don't remember.
Yeah, we'll wait till we get into the episode for that moment, but I was just like, wow, Steve, okay. Yeah, and like he's like doing the I'm gonna say it so much because I believe it and just gonna keep and ignoring the part of like, hey, there actually probably is something that Philip's pulling from that is very damaging and hurtful, even though you obviously didn't mean it.
Yeah, doubling down is not the answer here. However, I understand in the heat of the game and their negative interactions that Steve isn't thinking about or could be thinking that the worse he makes Philip look, the more likely it is he'll be voted out. Yeah.
We also just did, like, intent over impact is sort of new. I mean, it's not a new thing for everyone, but I think that's a newer thing that people have latched onto is, like, that the impact of their words matters more than the intention.
I didn't mean to do it.
In 2011, I think it was very much more mainstream that it's like, well, I didn't intend it, so who cares how you took it?
Uh-huh.
Not to excuse it, just, like, that's kind of where we are in 2011.
Yeah. I was trying to make think of like a joke that could fit the lens of like, I think your glasses are okay for your face, but nothing hit the way I wanted it to.
Okay. And then you doubled down trying to explain it. It's a bold choice.
It is a bold choice. You see, maybe I should just keep explaining it and just say it to other people off mic.
Sure. Yeah. See how long you can go.
Anyway, you asked me about Richard Pryor, and he has an album with the title That Racial Slur Is Crazy, and did several routines about the word and wanting everyone to stop using it. I kind of wonder what he would feel about it being reclaimed in AAVE, kind of akin to how some gay people have reclaimed homophobic slurs. But that context is what Philip is referring to, as he is definitely of a generation that would have grown up listening to Richard Pryor.
Mm.
Anyway, I don't want to belabor this any longer, but I will say there is a coda to this whole thing. Philip does have more to contribute to the discourse around him that will save for when his story ends.
Okay.
Unfortunately, I don't have too much else to add about this episode other than it was nominated by the show for an Emmy for cinematography, of all things.
What?
Which had to be fun for the very white Academy voters. But I also...
That's what are we doing?
I also dislike Julie in this episode for just adding fuel to the fire and honestly being an entertainment black hole. And also for something else that I'll save for the end of the season. Fascinating. Anyway, I don't want to color Jared's opinion on the season, but man, for as much promise as it had pre-merge, it really becomes a slog during this late pre-merge and now in the merge. But I hope you guys are at least enjoying talking about the non-controversial aspects of the season, and even with the stuff from episode 10. I thought you both handled it very well, so great listen as always, fellas.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
I think after this episode, the season will become more fun to talk about again. Not that I'm not going to enjoy ripping the show to shreds this episode, but yeah. All right. That we only have Ometepes and for some reason four people at Redemption Island.
How many people could you stack in Redemption Island?
At what point do you just have more people on Redemption Island than you have in the game?
That's crazy.
I don't like the way you reacted to that.
Last email from Roy, a defense of Boston Rob's All-Star Game. Hey, guys.
Ooh, okay.
You can call me Roy.
That's good, because that's the name you put there.
Yes. Technically, it wasn't anywhere in the email other than that one spot, so it's good to point out. And it's not in the email line. I'm going to keep going. I recently started watching Survivor and found your podcast a few seasons in, and it has been a great companion piece to my viewing experience. I've been listening to the pod for about 3 months now, and I finally caught up to you.
Freaks.
Seeing as you are watching Redemption Island now, it feels like an appropriate time to do my civic duty as a masshole from Boston and discuss my biggest gripe with your opinions across all seasons you've covered, with that being your opinion on Boston Rob's game in All-Stars.
That's of all of the strong and wrong opinions I throw out there, that's a crazy one to take issue with.
Every time I've heard him toward the lower/middle of your runner-up rankings, it has made me want to email, and I think it's finally time. Rob's All-Stars game is, in my admittedly biased opinion, the best runner-up game, at least to the point in the series I'm on.
Okay.
Whoa, let me explain. We go on. While Amber plays a good game, I feel you both give her far too much credit for the pair's game. Virtually every strategic move the pair makes is spearheaded by Rob. The Shapira Alliance forms around Rob. Rob is the one to bring in Rupert and Jenna after the absorption. The decision to vote off Lex was all Rob, with Amba waiting to stay true to Lex's final five, in which Rob and Amber lose. The move to cause Rupert and Tom to fight at final five in a position where they could easily team up to take out Rob and Amber, even convincing Lex to keep Amber, is a move that is primarily successful due to Rob's connections, and while Amber deserves credit for sticking the landing, Rob is undeniably more responsible for the move. The only move Amber is credited for is the move to take out Rob C, although that move was happening no matter what. Rob's also dominant in challenges, winning 4 of 7 individual immunities and being the most important factor in Shapira having the numbers at the merge. Finally, he's much less of a goat than Jared seems to think he is. If Jenna wins final immunity, she takes Rob, and Rob likely wins. Rob also knows Jenna is an easier win. However, due to him falling in love with Amba, this was obviously not an option. He is one Sheehan vote that Amba earns accidentally when Sheehan misunderstands a conversation she has with Amba, while she thinks she's the one leading Rob around blindly. Rob also wins against any other jury, as this jury is probably the most bitter jury in history, with people like Alicia having a very little right to be as bitter as she is, in my opinion. The preseason talk for this season claimed it would crown the Survivor GOAT, from what I understand.
As in greatest of all time, not the way that we use GOAT in Survivor most of the time, which is, again, needlessly confusing. Why didn't we pick a different animal?
I understand this jury was too prideful to allow someone who outplayed them to receive that title. Sorry about the long email, but as a guy who's met 1,000 people like Rob in my life while in the city, it's my duty to set the record straight here. As again, I think it's the conversation as the greatest runner-up game ever. Would love to hear your thoughts on this and keep up the great work. My work days are much more enjoyable on Mondays and Thursdays, thanks to you guys.
Oh, thank you.
That was really nice.
Do you want to say anything first, Stephen?
I'll let you go, and then I'll follow up.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot that we don't know about any season, right? And you say that, like, the only moves that Amber makes is this and this. I think we got, if I remember correctly, now we did watch this season many years ago. I'm pretty sure we got behind the scenes that Amber was doing more than was shown. And also, like, the conversation we did get with them, I got the impression that it was truly collaborative. It is gendered, though. Like, Boston Rob is the one doing, like, is doing the action, and so we give it to him. Whereas, like, Amber manages a social game, and that doesn't pop on camera, similar to, like, other female winners that we've had. I'm not going to take anything away from Boston Rob on the challenge aspect. He is a challenge beast, and that is fucking huge. He shows it every single season he's on. He is dominant.
Yeah.
The only person that seems to be able to beat him consistently is a literal NFL wide receiver that we have this season. But, like, jury management is part of it. And All-Stars is such a tricky game because it was the first time returnees came in, and they all had these pre-game alliances. And Boston Rob leveraged that in ways that, like, if we had seen the conversations that were reported and that many of the people hinted at in throughout the game and in the jury of, like, you promised me this, you promised me this, we would look at Boston Rob and go, wow, you don't keep your word. You break your deals in ways that leave the bridge burned, and therefore people don't want to vote for you. And because Survivor doesn't want to show that there's pre-game relationships and bias, they just kind of sweep that under the rug.
Yeah, I think my argument in this whole thing is what's your goal?
Yeah.
If the goal is to make it to the end, Rob had a fantastic game. Like, he did everything right to get him to the end. If your goal is to win, then he pissed off a lot of people on that jury. And you're right, I think, in the email saying this was a very bitter jury.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
They went over the top with it, but you gotta jury manage a little bit.
I mean, yeah, like, sure, like, the Lex deal was really, really impressive, and leaning on that to, like, save Amber when Lex should not have saved Amber. And then voting him out, I believe, the very next episode?
I'm pretty sure that was right.
Like, okay, you just lit a jury
vote
on fire.
The first opportunity he got.
Right. I mean, if he did that, like, two or three votes from then, I think you get away with that. But you burn it, you burn him the next time that you can. And Boston Rob's biggest weakness, we've actually seen it, like, on this season and every season he's been on, is once he feels like somebody's coming after him, he just will go and take them out.
Yeah.
We see it with Steve this episode. He's like, maybe I need to vote out Steve instead of Ralph if we want to get one, because now he's trying to rally people against me.
Would you consider that the appropriate amount of paranoia, or just, like, a dial too far?
I think this whole season Boston Rob's been a dial too far paranoid. And it's going to come back to bite him, because there is a world in which he gets to the final tribal of this season and the exact same thing happens.
Mm.
Because people go, hey, you kept Philip around despite nobody else wanting him around. Although, like, everyone should have agency, and if they want to get rid of him, just fucking get rid of him. But, like, you know, you created this buddy system. You made two camps. Like, you are the one that has the fallout from all of that because you acted like a dick. Mm-hmm. And that would be two seasons of that happening.
Yeah.
If he makes it there.
Sure. Okay.
Do you want to add anything else?
No, I think I again point to your opinion is valid. And,
oh, yeah.
Like,
all of this is subjective.
Yeah. I want you to have your favorites, and we all have hometown favorites.
And Boston Rob is one of my favorite players.
Yeah.
I, like, just like actually somebody mentioning Panama, like Panama is one of my favorite seasons. It's not the best season, but it's one of my favorites.
But it's a fun one. Cool. Anyway, thank you so much for the email, Roy. Thank you, everyone, for emailing in. As always, thank you for following along with this goofy-ass podcast we do twice a week.
Yeah.
It's part of my life. I'm sacrificing current Survivor so that I can watch past Survivor with my buddy Jared.
You're sacrificing watching 50, which has the potential to be one of the best seasons of all time, for the post-Rice Wars Redemption Island episode.
It started out pretty good. We're one episode in, and I'm real happy.
Good.
All right. Let's move on. Bumper.
All right. So this episode came out on April 27th of 2011. A couple things happened in the week between episodes. The first one being a bit of a bummer. At least 300 people are killed in the deadliest tornado outbreak in the southern United States since the 1974 super outbreak.
Jeez.
Yeah.
Has a tornado ever gone through your hometown?
Yes, although I think they technically called it straight line winds, but it was definitely a tornado. Mm. It knocked out, was it my senior year of high school or my junior year? I don't remember. I think like the last like 3 weeks you're supposed to have school, we just didn't.
Oh, man.
Because like we didn't have power, so it was just like, yeah, all right.
Yeah, that makes sense.
What about you?
Not in my, at least while I was living there, never had a tornado or before then. The, like, three towns over, their high school got wiped out by a tornado.
It's such a Midwestern way to put it. Like, rural Midwestern, like, three times over.
We'll say, like, 30 to 45 minutes away, high school got absolutely destroyed.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hopefully when no one was there.
I think actually when no one was there.
Okay. U.S. TV singing competition, The Voice premieres. American Idol died, The Voice appears.
If anyone from Wadena, Minnesota wants to clarify if anyone was in that building, feel free.
U.S. President Barack Obama, coerced by incessant false birther accusations, publicly releases a copy of his birth certificate.
So dumb.
Yeah.
Just this whole argument is so dumb.
Yeah, man. And it, like, it's only gotten worse. Yeah, man, those were the good times. Who would have thought that as we wage war with Iran? Okay. And then the song S&M by Rihanna is number one on the charts, featuring Britney Spears. So we did get a new one there as we quickly shuffle away from all the other shit I just said. The top five movies are Scream 4, African Cats, Madea's Big Happy Family, we're going to talk about number two, number one, Rio, but number two, Water for Elephants. Steven, are you familiar with Water for Elephants?
I should be. I don't know what this is.
What do you think it is by the title?
It's either a just straight drama or it's a nature documentary.
It is a drama.
That's what I thought.
Jacob Jankowski, Robert Pattinson, a veterinary student, is close to graduating when a terrible tragedy forces him to leave school. With nowhere else to go, he hops on a passing train and finds it belongs to a traveling circus. Jacob takes a job as an animal caretaker and meets Marlena, Reese Witherspoon, a beautiful circus performer. Their shared compassion for a special elephant named Rosie leads to love, but August, Christopher Waltz, Marlena's cruel husband, stands in their way.
Oh no.
What do you think is rated on Rotten Tomatoes, Stephen?
I think this is a good movie. I know the title, like, and I feel like this was made into a play as well. So I'm going to go with a critic score of 83, an audience score of 81.
You're a little high. It is good, but you're a little high, especially on the critic. Critic is 60.
Okay.
Audience is 70. So audiences are like 7 out of 10. Perfectly mediocre. Oh, also, I told him about Gone at my quarterstaff class.
Oh, God,
and told him to go watch it. Anyway,
no.
The consensus for Water for Elephants being, it's a tale tastefully told and beautifully filmed, but Water for Elephants suffers from a pronounced lack of chemistry between its leads.
Okay.
Yeah. Can't fake chemistry.
No, you can't.
That's why you want to have actors together in the casting room sometimes. Anyway, that's it.
All right. Then let us get into the episode. Episode 11, A Surprise Package.
I'll give you a surprise package.
I've got a package that's Legally Blonde.
Ah, yes.
Yes.
From the last time on, I was like, oh, it's interesting. They're focusing on Andrea. Okay. But like, there's a lot of either relitigating or just completely swapping narratives where Jeff's like, and now it's clear that Zapatera is in trouble or whatever. I'm like, dude, it's been clear for like six episodes.
Yeah.
What do you mean? And then I also wondered, is part of the reason Julie went home because the Ometepes didn't want to like take Philip's side? Like, or if it was the shorts, or like, what was the, cause like Julie doesn't seem like a bigger target than Steve or even Ralph to me.
It could have been a situation where, I don't know, they were paranoid that maybe there is an idol in play somewhere and they're just like, I don't know, let's take him out and let's not let him know who the actual vote is. Let's obscure it. It just seems a little out of nowhere.
Yeah. Very random.
I mean, Julie is a physical contender. I don't know that I would call her a physical threat at this point.
No.
But it's certainly Ralph is more of a problem, right?
Yeah, I guess it's just like, who cares, whatever the order is. I don't know. But yeah, I did want to mention the beach after Tribal is very interesting to me.
Okay.
So again, Steve doubles down and he goes up to Philip and like shakes his hand and is like, I'm paraphrasing, but like, hey, you know, we're both men. We can shake hands.
I want to reach out an olive branch and have a handshake.
Yeah. He basically says to his face, there was nothing, I'm not racist. There was nothing racial what I said. I just genuinely think you're crazy, which is buck wild to say to his face.
It's truly not how you bury the hatchet on that one.
No. not even saying like you were acting crazy, just like he doubles down and says to his face, I think you're crazy, which is insane. But the way Philip, okay, it's a brief moment, and I know, listen, I don't want to over examine the way that different people react to different things, but Philip seems almost jovial when he's back just with the Ometepes, when he doesn't have to have when they're not in Tribal anymore. And even says something along the lines of like, oh wow, I didn't want to stay on that for so long. I didn't want to talk about race, but it just kept going that direction. And I'm just drawing the comparisons between like the way that Jason acted after the confrontation with Ben versus the way that Philip acts after a confrontation with Steve. And again, people react in different ways, but it like something about the way that Philip was handling it afterwards felt weird.
Yeah. I mean, two things. I think he got a little bit of a resolution out of it. Like, true. Jeff went and said, this, cool. That's what we're going to go with as the answer.
He got a therapy session.
He did get a therapy session. And it's been drawn out for long enough that perhaps that's all he needed was someone to hear it. Plus, he got what he wanted here. Like,
yeah.
Someone from Ometepe is gone.
And also
Zapatera.
Like,
sorry.
Yes. And also like Steve is not Ben. Like Ben was being like aggressive and Steve was much more like defensive about it. So mm-hmm. like that also changes the dynamic. They're also different generations. Like people handle things differently and like the generational divide is big. I just like, I saw it and that parallel jumped out to me right away.
Yeah. And it's not like Steve was cut slack on this. His back was firmly placed against the wall.
Yeah.
As we see in this episode.
And he got fucking beheaded this episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Philip says, you know, I didn't feel like the handshake was genuine. It was a little self-serving. He mocked me a couple of times. I don't know. Steve goes, I would think that a mature guy with any empathy would have reached out after going off like he did, but I guess I had to do it. Had to have known what an ass he made of himself at Tribal.
And maybe that's part of it too. Like if there is a teeny bit of embarrassment on Philip's level, at least of like how extreme he got, or even just like the emotions he showed. Like, you know, sometimes people open up, they get embarrassed afterwards. I don't know. We don't need to dwell on it anymore. I just, the night after is interesting in this one.
And I think both are still very firmly planted in that they are in the right.
Oh, yeah.
So then to cap it all off, oh, well, maybe this showed them that they need to cut Philip loose. And Rob, like, next moment, we're not cutting him loose. I'm taking him all the way, baby.
He's not worried about the Philip stink.
No, not at all.
I can't believe that. I mean, Boston Rob knows and loves Survivor.
Mm-hmm.
There's no way he didn't watch Samoa. He was there for Heroes versus Villains. He watched Parvati get dragged down by Russell. And he's just like, no, I'm built different.
He was famously in the audience.
Right. Well, he was.
Sorry, for a couple seasons ago.
Yeah, for Nicaragua, he was in the audience.
Yeah.
For Heroes versus Villains, he sat there and, like, watched as votes were count. He was on stage when Parvati couldn't get out from underneath Russell's, like, negativity. And he's just going to do that? Okay.
To continue with the Steve thing a little bit, he calls Philip numbnuts, like, to the ladies. And like,
sure.
Come on, man. He went out to the Big Rock.
Do you think they picked this beach just for the Big Rock?
It's a nice rock.
Do you think that's why they didn't go to one of the two beaches that the tribes were originally at? Because they found this Big Rock?
I like this rock. Is that a boulder? That's a nice boulder.
Well, they've had like a million helicopter shots, people having conversations near it, so.
Yeah, so Philip has a premonition about where he would find his shorts because...
And that premonition is called John the Cameraman.
Where I was told to look near water, or look near the watering hole, and I don't know, so he takes a shovel and goes and digs at wherever he sees a rock, I guess, and the first one, it's not there, the second one, boom, found my shorts.
Production told him. Like, I think production told him.
They didn't want to waste as much money blurring out his penis?
Maybe. Like, I mean, like, I'm kind of joking, but, like, also I'm kind of not. And also, like, with all the ugliness of like, that led up to it, and I don't know, I could just totally see them being, like, even if they didn't directly tell him, like the way that they might have, it's alleged that they hinted to Russell where idols were, like, oh, every time I go in this area, the cameras are pointed right at me.
Yep.
Okay.
Go find your shorts, man. Just go do it.
Yeah. Hey, everyone, all of the contestants, everyone on crew would like to stop seeing your dick. The shorts are there.
If you insist. And then he continues to clown on Julie. Like, here's to you. You don't mess with an undercover specialist. And then bastardizes a line from, is it A Few Good Men?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Where you can't stand the truth, Jack Nicholson says. That's not what he says.
No, you can't handle.
You can't handle the truth.
Famously.
Let this be a warning to all who may hide shorts from me in the future.
That was kind of funny. I'm so sick of Philip, but that was kind of funny.
And then Steve, congratulations. We're at peace.
It even felt like Steve and everyone else wanted to, like, the pausing, sometimes when contestants pause in certain ways, I go, I feel like you're self-censoring what you can't say for production purposes.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I feel like you're calculating what to say to Philip of, like, yeah, dude, I know the producer told you where it is.
Hooray for you.
I could be reading too much into that, but.
Anyway, Philip's excited to show up to the duel and rub it in Julie's face that he found his shorts.
Okay.
Hooray for you. Anyway, at Redemption Island, Julie slept great last night. Matt, how you doing?
It's harder and harder to get up every morning. I have seen the face of God and he's weeping.
I'm out here wasting away. I miss my family. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know why God wants me here.
Why was I born? Just to suffer?
He's literally been carrying me these last 4 days, and I'm so over this game. And Mike's just sitting there like, dude's not okay. He's in a downward spiral.
I have no votes, but I must compete. I mean, Jeff lays it out later. Matt has, quote-unquote, played Survivor for 7 days, and he's played Redemption Island for 21. That is a 3-to-1 ratio. That is fucking brutal, man.
It's just not fair.
No.
It's not...
This feels like, a psychological experiment. Honestly, I'm not... I would not be surprised if the reason why they are leaving 3, and I guess now 4, people at Redemption Island is just so that Matt like what they're doing to Matt doesn't break international law in terms of like isolation. I'm being hyperbolic there, obviously, but like real talk, I would not be surprised if they're doing that for Matt's mental health of like, hey, let's leave somebody else out here. Because this poor fucking guy.
Have some interaction with other people before you send them home.
Yeah. Fuck, man. With Dem Matt Island going strong.
He's really just doing what he can. So
I don't remember the last time we've seen a player that wanted to be in the game less that wasn't, like, their body wasn't deteriorating.
Mm-hmm,
or their body or mind wasn't deteriorating. Like, I guess, like, we have the Micronesia, like, basically mental health medevac. But outside of, like, those situations, Matt, his whole fucking spirit's been crushed. Because he's like, what, I'm going to go back in and just get voted out again? What's the point?
I'd like to take a moment to quote from the musical Book of Mormon. Oh God, why are you letting me die? So anyway, we jump to the duel, and like you said, 21 days on Redemption Island, only 7 days on quote-unquote regular Survivor.
Yeah.
It's just funny hearing out of Jeff's mouth. Yeah, I'm at peace either way. I'm ready to go home.
I also, listen, everyone, including Andrea, blames Andrea for backstabbing Matt.
Yeah.
Where, like, do we not remember 3 episodes ago when he set himself on fire? He poured gasoline on himself, lit a match, and tried to hand the match to Andrea and dropped it himself. And then it's like, Andrea, how could you do this to me?
Yeah. I mean, how can you blame her when you're like, hey, we have this great plan. We could maybe make a move. And then...
Oh, I told Boston Rob our plan.
Oh, okay. You said your plan?
And he definitely trusted you the whole time, right?
Our plan. Our plan together that we were doing to get rid of Boston Rob.
And like, there was no fallout from me going home and you staying, right? Like, surely Boston Rob doesn't hold a grudge, so it's fine.
I need this man gone as quick as possible. Anyway, we're playing Survivor Shuffleboard. You know, the drop-down, bang-out duel that you're used to. Shuffleboard.
They didn't even put a map on it this time.
We don't have time for maps.
Well, I guess that's because they're not aiming for one particular spot. It's over a goal.
Yeah,
but
this is actually, like, close to shuffleboard.
Yeah, no, it is. It is just table shuffleboard with a couple obstacles instead. Like, I've played this at a mini-putt barcade near us. Like, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, you got to land 3 pucks in your end zone, which is, again, just funny to hear on a Survivor.
Goal. Yeah, just why does Jeff love parlor games?
Because they're cheap.
Okay, well, that's fair.
I actually don't know that this would be cheap, but, oh, they got lots of sand.
They got lots of sand.
Yeah, any part of it, the puck touching it counts. First to land all 3 wins, and then, yeah, top 2 survive. Mike lands 2 immediately, and you're like, wow, this will be done real quick, right?
Right.
And then we just keep going, and Matt locks in and lands all 3.
Matt is starting to make me think God is real. Like, at this point, I can't rule it out.
While simultaneously staring at Andrea, just like, this is for you. I'm coming to get you.
Actually, I flipped it. Matt is making me realize that spite is real.
There you go. Okay. Sure. Yeah. And Jeff loves to chime in. God is not done talking to Matt. 3 pucks in the end zone, staying alive, whether you like it or not.
So I think in that time he didn't, but every other time in this section that he talks about God, Jeff, that is, he says, your God.
He does the first time.
He does later, too, I think. I clocked it a couple times.
I don't know about that, because I did clock that first one, and I was very hyper aware of it.
I thought he said it before and after the challenge. But either way, it's just interesting, because, like, we don't hear that so much for the Christian God in America, or in most Western countries. People just say God, as, like, that is the default God. Like, the Christian God is the default one. And it was, like, weirdly respectful. It was, like, kind of nice to hear Jeff, like, be, like, your God. Not just, like, the God that we all believe in because we're Americans.
Or maybe it's just, like, a little bit with a tinge of irony that he's, like, your God is putting you through all of this.
Or Jeff is God. Like, Jeff is like, I am God of Survivor, so that's your God.
This is my domain.
Jeff's like, I used to be an atheist, and then I found out I'm a god.
Anyway, Mike also lands his last puck, so he moves in, and Julie is out of the game.
Where's he moving, Steven?
He's moving back into Redemption Island.
Yeah, Mad Island.
How do you think Julie does in Future Survivor?
She didn't pop. Like, there just wasn't a ton about her that I think... She's an older woman, so, like, she has bias going up against her of, like, getting camera time, which isn't the most important thing. But there just wasn't a lot from her in terms of, like, moves or strategy, in my opinion. I don't know. A lot of the Zapateras are hard to talk about, to be perfectly honest, because they moved... They lived and died as a unit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's such a different way to play Survivor... Or such an old school way to play Survivor, frankly, like that's single digit seasons like way to play that. Like, there's nothing I saw from her that jumped out to me in terms of like, oh, she'd be this amazing player. But for the demographic that is going to be targeted early, she's one of the stronger ones physically. She's one of the stronger older women that we've had physically. I think, was she a firefighter?
She was a firefighter.
Yeah. So like, she's obviously gonna be good around camp. I think she's somebody that doesn't have a big impact on the game, but could be somebody's like number two or number three in like as like a high upside and maybe gets farther in the game as like a final five, final six type of deal. But I don't see her as like a winner. I think that she's very loyal, which is nice. Yeah. She has some charisma about her. Like
she's very bubbly and like
yes.
it feels very like hit or miss. Like she's when it's isolated on her, she tries really hard to be like this bubbly, happy, positive. I buried the shorts.
Yeah. I think the most telling thing about her and why I don't even know if she would go on the show under most other circumstances. She tells us when she gets voted off, she's like, Jeff asks, why are you here? Which is interesting because I don't remember him asking that to people, like, unless they're quitting or they're thinking about quitting. But, like, you know, what made you come on the show? And she's like, well, my house, like a lot of Americans, my house is in foreclosure.
Real relevant at the time, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And so, like, if she was in a good financial position, I don't know if she'd go on the game at all. And that's kind of not a great headspace to go into Survivor with, to be honest. Of, like, I don't want to be here, but I need the money. Like, even contestants that have needed the money, I feel like they wanted to be in the game. Like, Jane. Like, I think Jane really wanted to play Survivor.
Yeah.
I don't even know that this contestant wanted to be there.
Well, we found Matt's purpose, though. To convert everyone who goes to Redemption Island.
She said she's gonna go to church and be an active member of the community. Like, hey, good for her.
Yeah. And then on her way out the door goes, peanut butter and oatmeal.
She's not coming back, right?
She is not coming back.
You scared me there for a second when you stammered and I was like, did I just say about how like I don't really feel like she really wanted to play the game and then she's coming back?
Nah, she's not coming back. This is the end for Julie. And
I guess I should say too, I actually wanna clarify something. I think she played the game. I don't want to make it sound like she didn't try to play the game. I just don't think that, like, in normal circumstances, she would sign up in the first place. When she was here, she was playing.
I did not know that she was a Pacific Islander native Hawaiian.
Oh, cool.
Interesting. Yeah. She's the third of six Pacific Islander contestants to play the game. Lost 24 pounds during her time on Redemption Island. And this is the thing that I was waiting for to talk about because it's real fun for me. Prior to the game, like way back in 1995,
okay,
Julie appeared as a contestant on the seventh season of American Gladiators.
Oh.
Yeah, write that down. Because guess you what? It is accessible for us to watch. I've already checked.
Okay. Very cool.
I love American Gladiators. Also, I say this knowing that the American Gladiators documentary came out, and that's not great, but I loved that American Gladiators show.
Sure.
That was one that I was real jazzed about, and then they brought it back, and it was fun for like one season.
Yeah. Okay, well, on the list of bonus episodes. Maybe that'll be this season.
Hell yeah, brother.
I've never seen it.
You've never seen American Gladiators?
Nope.
Jared, we might have to do that.
Okay. Right. Lock it in.
Lock it in. But we also have to watch the Jeff movie at some point.
Yeah. There'll be a season where, like, somebody that doesn't have somebody that does anything else that really pops to us, and we'll do that then.
Fair. All right. Anyway, back in the game. Andrea says, you know what? I don't want to talk to him if he comes back. I feel bad, but he's not going to trust me. And why would he? I stabbed him
twice
in the back and in the front.
And again, he's self-immolated, but yeah.
And Natalie is like, well, that's what he wanted. He didn't want to play the game, so.
What do you mean, Natalie? No, it's okay, girl. He wanted you to betray him twice. He wanted to go live on Redemption Island for more than 3 times the number of days that he got to play the actual social game of Survivor.
He handed you the shotgun and started quoting Of Mice and Men, and just you had to put the two together.
I'm not saying that Matt didn't set himself on fire, but I'm not saying that Matt wanted to set himself on fire.
But I feel bad. I think he's pissed at me. And of all of us, I played him the hardest. And, like, while technically true, I don't think you need to put that all on you.
Andrea feels like she's able to separate the person from the game. And it doesn't feel like Natalie or Matt or most of the other people on Ometepe are able to. Honestly, it doesn't seem like Boston Rob is always able to for other people. For himself, he's like, oh yeah, it's a game. But then other people where he's like, oh, Andrea's too close to Matt, despite Andrea telling us, and probably him, I'm sure they had a conversation, that like, I like him as a person, but he's an idiot in the game. So he does not extend that grace past himself. And that might be Andrea's downfall. We'll see.
Yeah, and Andrea says, I feel guilty on a human level, and not on the game level, of course. Like, I did what I had to do, but you feel bad for the guy.
Yeah.
So then the Ometepe people are like, she feels bad. She needs to go.
Yeah, like,
we can't possibly let her reunite with this person who could possibly work with her, even though he probably hates her right now.
I mean, admittedly, it is, like, going back to our emails, there is something here that is a little interesting of, like, the authoritarian mindset, right? Of, like, oh, any divergence from complete control and just, like, blending in and, like, that's enough.
Honestly, you need a soft scapegoat at this point because the writing on the wall is coming that you have to cannibalize each other.
True.
So why not put that out there right now?
Yeah.
As long as it stays within your group and doesn't get to her.
Yeah, which, I mean, it obviously wasn't bad enough that they felt like they wanted to get rid of her before the rest of the Zapateras.
Well, that is the conversation in this episode.
Yeah, I mean, we hear a lot of conversations that people afterwards go, that was never going to fucking happen.
That's fair.
I don't think that, like, Julie was apparent, like, told us that she might align with Russell, but, like, I didn't fucking believe her. Well, I didn't really believe that Andrea is that much on the block this episode.
There's this conversation between Grant and Rob of Grant saying we should get Andrea out first. She's good at challenges, like, particularly with puzzles, and Rob agrees, plus she has friends over there. I couldn't tell if he was referring to the jury or Redemption Island.
I think the jury.
Or both.
Well, the Redemption Island will become the jury.
Correct, yeah. And
but that's kind of a moot point, too, because, like, all the Zapateras have friends over there. Like, Steve has more friends over there than Andrea does.
Yeah, they're not worried about the Zapateras.
Well, I mean, they vote them out. But, yeah. Like, Grant's, like, jumping ahead a little bit, and I don't think it's a good idea.
It's things like feeling bad for Matt, like, ah, you never learn. You just keep doing these things, like having feelings and emotions. Ugh.
Yeah. Remember when Grant, where there was like one little bit of The Next Time On where we thought Grant was going to have like a mind of his own instead of just be a very meaty puppet for Boston Rob?
Meaty.
Yeah. That was fun.
Punts. Yeah, timing is everything in this game. Gotta strike at the right time there, Jared.
That is true.
Anyway, we jump to the immunity challenge. A good old-fashioned log roll.
I don't think they can cast NFL wide receivers in Survivor anymore.
Why do you say that,
like,
Jared?
Like, ones that are still actively playing the game of football or are young enough that they could, because I knew who won this before the challenge started. This might as well be a football drill.
We've You're right.
I mean, like, being an... I mean, it's not a football drill, but, like, being an NFL wide receiver is all about your footwork. So, okay, Grant, congratulations. Here's immunity.
Yeah. It certainly gives him a huge advantage. It's not the get underneath the trough of water real fast and spit things into this cup. That was very much a football drill. This is just football adjacent.
So far, in the last few episodes... we've had Grant run routes.
Yeah.
Do the literal football drill of going under stuff.
Yeah.
And then something that the three cone drill probably translates quite easily to. Sure, man. It'd be like if they put like somebody had to direct the best scene for three of the challenges and I'm the only theater person on the season. Like, okay, great.
Anyway, they're doing a good old-fashioned March Madness bracket with this log roll game. I sent out an invitation for my work with the round ball rock skit from SNL. Do you know what that is?
It sounds vaguely familiar.
You know, the NBA on NBC had a very iconic theme song that everyone loved, and it got there's a skit on SNL where the guy's like basketball. Like, okay, wait, we don't want the song with the lyrics, but the lyrics are iconic, like the whole song is the lyrics.
I love that.
Yeah, it's pretty good. Go watch that. Anyway, quick speed through this. Grant versus Rob. Honestly, the best matchup. Yeah. Well, other than...
Ralph does a good job.
Yeah, the last one's real good. Grant wins, says I love you, Rob.
Yeah. I will say that, like, Boston Rob was the closest to getting Grant off of the log. I didn't stop my cadence. I finished the sentence. I saw what was coming.
Phrasing.
I got out of the way of the bus.
Ashley beats Andrea. Ralph beats Steve. Jeff asks Steve... yeah, Steve, do you do this? Like, have you ever done this before? He's like, yeah, I'm in a league every Saturday, Jeff. What do you think? No, of course not. And Philip beats Natalie. In the semis, Grant beats Ashley, Ralph beats Philip, and Grant beats Ralph in the end. And it seems like a good match, that last one. Like, yeah. They are able to navigate at different directions and like stop and go. And
it's never close, but Ralph does a good job. Like, I don't, like, once Grant found the way, like, he wraps his feet around the sides of the log and then just never lost balance. I was like, dear God, dude.
Yeah, it's no woodsman games, but, you know, it's fun to watch for a little bit.
It was also hillbilly sport, so I was pulled for Ralph, but
yeah. But I found it interesting that Ralph winning would have been the worst case scenario for Steve.
Yes.
But he was actively cheering for Ralph.
Yeah, because they're buddies.
Obviously, but...
I think...
You're just... Well, I guess maybe that's it. He's expediting his way out the door.
I think at some point post-merge, the Zapateras gave up. I mean, again, like, when the other tribe has built literally an entirely separate camp...
Yeah.
And they will not talk to you alone... Okay.
Yeah. There's a point where you're just like, yeah, it's not the writing on the wall. The wall is just the wall. We've just painted the wall red, yeah, and my face is on there.
You're just in line for the slaughterhouse. Like, you're just waiting for your number to be called.
Yeah. Anyway, so not only does Grant win immunity, he also wins a cake that he can eat for 2 minutes.
This sucks.
With his friends.
This really sucks. Why are we timing it?
I agree. I think it's dumb.
What? This is such a lame-ass reward.
It's there to make drama, but also not give them anything.
They have not done a good job of trying to insert drama into, or I guess like, or break
They're
up
trying.
On Metepe's. This was not a good attempt. This was not a full-throated attempt, and I don't think the fucking bullshit at Tribal was a very good attempt either.
But we have a twist, Jared.
Was that even an attempt, or was it, like you said, a mercy killing?
I do think they were trying to just expedite it.
Yeah.
Or hope that Steve comes out with that immunity win.
You know what I thought the twist was going to be? And this would only work on Redemption Island. Like, on the season of Redemption Island. Make it so that the person who got voted out gets to take someone with them. Pick someone that doesn't have immunity, and they are also out of the game.
I don't think Survivor would want that.
The Ralph has spoken.
The Ralph has spoken.
And again, that wouldn't work. I mean, it would also be dumb in this season. That would absolutely be atrocious in a season where you're voted out and you are actually done.
Yeah.
But if they want to try dumb bullshit, I mean, I guess you get a second chance, so fine.
Sure.
I'm glad they didn't do it.
Yeah, that would be the worst twist I think I've ever seen. It would make me very unhappy.
Steven, we are named after the worst twist you've ever seen.
Yeah, sure.
Oh, shit.
Anyway. Grant takes Rob as he's his main man. And Ralph begs a little bit. It's like, I'll hug your neck if you let me eat the cake. Jeff's like, that might have taken you out of the running, my man. And then proceeds to say, well, I'm not a gay person, but I don't know what else to do, man.
He basically says, I'm not gay, but 20 bucks is 20 bucks. Which, like, sure, yeah, whatever. I also, the caption, by the way, because I had closed captioning on because I have to if Ralph's going to be in the episode. Otherwise, I can't understand him.
In, like, 10 minutes, we have a whole, like, what the hell did you just say?
But Grant takes Rob, but the caption said Ralph.
Yes, I did see
that
too.
And so I went, wait, what? He's taking, I was like, oh, is that just because, like, he's in the final, so I'm gonna give him some too? No.
Nah, it's just a misheard caption.
Yeah.
Or a mistyped.
That would have been a great idea. Also, it might have gotten you voted out.
So, Ralph is offering for Grant to stick his dick in the chocolate cake, and then he'll just take whatever he can. But he chooses Andrea. And then they get 2 minutes to eat the cake. It's nothing, so I'm going to move past it, unless you really want to talk about them eating cake.
Nope.
Cool. And then also, the twist. The twist is a box, but you can't open the box until Tribal.
They just give it to him at Tribal.
But they want them to know it's there, and they want them to know that you have the power. Fair. And we're not changing anything.
Yeah, it's the not changing anything. You're right.
Yeah. Anyway, they return to camp, box in hand, and they speculate on what this twist could be. Could be a double vote. It could be a deck of cards to draw someone, and someone has to go home.
That would suck.
That would suck. It would be silly for us to vote out one of our own, says Andrea. Cut to everyone saying, well, maybe we should vote for Andrea. This is where Ralph is like, I ain't telling nobody nothing what happens. And Steve goes, huh?
What?
I'm sorry? What are you saying? All I can hope is that what's in the box is good for me, says Ralph. Unfortunate.
Yeah.
He doesn't even get to see what's in the box.
I also, so the other side, the Ometepe side, says, like, well, we have the control, so the twist should be good for us. And I was like, girl, that's not the point of the twist.
That's not how Survivor works.
Now, it is how it works this time.
Correct.
Because they just are like, all right, just double tap them. Just get it over with.
Let's just get to the good part.
But, man, that's, I think it was Ashley that says that, and it's like, oh, you have learned nothing in your 28 days out here.
Rob is funny, though. Rob goes, why is there always a twist? Yeah. It doesn't need to be a twist. Twists aren't good for me.
I'm honestly surprised they left that in. Because the show likes
Rob
twists.
Criticizing Survivor?
Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. Rob goes to Natalie and Ashley and is like, all right, if it's two votes, we vote out Andrea. Like, if we have to do something where we can't vote for Steve, it's Andrea. Oh, I thought you were giving me, like, a hold on. It's your thumb. Thumbs up, my dude.
I was just stimming.
All right. Steve, then, after saying I'm dead, I'm out, I'm done, and everyone discounting him and saying, nah, he's staying around because I'm not afraid of him, then goes to Ashley and Natalie and goes, all right, now's your chance. You want to take out Rob? I'll do it. We're voting Rob. So if you want a chance, he'll do it. Otherwise, he'll pick you off, and then he'll take Nimrod, point over to Philip, to the finals.
Which, I mean, Natalie knows that's true. Because Boston Rob has told Natalie that. But, like, Natalie's like, well, that's going to be me sitting next to Boston Rob and Philip. So, okay. Yeah, it's really fucking dire straits if you're on Zapatero when, like, you know, a lot of times the opposition wants to at least, like, make a deal. Like, oh, we're going to swing some people over.
Yeah, let's see what we can do here.
They're not even trying to do that. No. They haven't been trying to do that for a while. They're just telling people in the other tribe where they're putting their votes so that they can get the numbers themselves.
If someone decides they want to play this game, yeah, go ahead.
Will no one rid me of this meddlesome Rob? Like, that's basically what he's saying.
Yeah, and they're just sitting there, yeah, uh-huh, all right, thanks for telling us, bye. It'd be a great plan if we actually wanted to do that, if we wanted to work with Andrea.
Yeah. I don't blame Steve for not knowing the rift because nobody does except for Kelly and Natalie.
Yeah. And then they go immediately to Rob and is like, hey, he tried to do this. And Rob's like, Steve may be more of a threat than I thought. Isn't that crazy that maybe the one time, I always say like, do something. The one time Steve does something here, it moves the target back to him.
That is the risk of doing something.
It is the risk.
It is a balancing act. Sometimes the answer is shut up, though here I don't think there was an answer.
Yeah.
I think he was going home no matter what happened.
Anything else before Tribal?
No.
Great. We show up to Tribal, and it's about as done deal could be.
Yeah.
It's Steve or Ralph. Unless there's something we don't know, says Rob. Yeah.
He's inspired loyalty in them. I'll give him that.
Ralph says, it's going to be me. Steve says, it's going to be Ralph. We all know what this is.
Yeah.
Grant all kind of builds up Steve, though, a little bit. The dude played in the NFL. He's not a quitter. Philip says he's not as feeble as everyone may think he is. He could surprise us all in some later challenge and go, gotcha. I'm actually very athletic right now.
Sure, man. Yeah, totally. I do want to give Grant a little bit of credit. We have not heard him say that he played in the NFL. Like, I mean, he's not hiding it, but like that could be an opportunity. Like a less savvy, I know I just joked earlier, he's just being Boston Rob's puppet. And that is true because it aligns to his interests. But like a less savvy player would be like, Steve played in the NFL. I played in the NFL. I know that people from that NFL players don't quit. And then remind everyone that, hey guys, I played in the NFL. Oh, you don't want people to remember that if you're on Survivor, so don't say it.
Yeah.
And, like, so, okay, you didn't make the mistake that would have been so easy to make there.
And then we pivot the conversation to, hey, you know, in seasons past, Rob asked a guy to save his girlfriend and then cut him at the next available opportunity. So, like, now's the time to do something while you have the ability to do something.
Yeah.
And Jeff has to explain all the backstory and the lore of Rob's Survivor All-Stars experience.
Which, he kind of carries water for Boston Rob here. To be like, on the flip side, like, he comes to Boston Rob's defense, which
he
is
never
like,
betrayed Amba. And he never has. But not since.
It then, like, if you think about that for even 5 seconds then, it actually kind of blows up in Boston Rob's face. Because if you're sitting there, and if you're Natalie or Andrea or Ashley or Philip or Grant, and you go, am I Amber or am I Lex? Well, I'm probably not going to marry Boston Rob. That would be difficult.
That would be hard at this point.
So I'm probably more like Lex and therefore expendable. If they have those thoughts, they keep them to themselves.
The other argument could be that the people that he is most loyal to, he is loyal to the T.
Have we seen that? Because, like,
Marquesas, I would disagree with that.
Yeah, I was going to say, Marquesas, I think we can throw away. That's Boston Rob, but it's really not. Like, that's somebody that did, like, there's very little Survivor for him to even have, like, looked back on. We can kind of throw that away. But there is, I guess, a little bit of it in there.
To this point, though, all of them are in that loyalty circle of he has done nothing to wrong me.
That's true.
And they all think they're in this loyalty circle, so.
Well, and they all are, I guess.
It just depends on how small the circle gets.
And it has to keep getting smaller.
Correct.
It's just, yeah. And I guess no one clearly being on the bottom is really doing so much work for Ometepe. That is, though, the strongest alliances are when nobody can actually tell who's on the bottom. And, like, it should be Philip, but Philip's such a disaster that, like, maybe he's not, because why not keep him around? So, sure. Yeah.
So then we vote, and Steve makes one last effort to be like, come on, guys, let's do it. Let's vote him out. And they don't listen.
No.
Ralph is voted out on a 6-2 line.
Yeah.
He tries to leave prematurely.
Like, yeah, I was like, did Ralph forget about Redemption Island?
See you, Jeff. Like, whoa, hold on. Not so fast. Grab your torch. You'll have a chance to get back in this game. Let me give my spiel. It's the one thing they let me do in this place.
With the music and him going, whoa, one second. I thought that was going to be the twist. I was like, what is it going to be?
You're actually back in this game.
And you have immunity.
You actually do my job now. Go ahead. Nope.
We're going to switch places.
They send him on his way, and then they say, you still got that box? Who has the box? Steve has it. Wouldn't it be real funny if the person who had the box got voted out?
I had to assume that they would have handed it to the person next to them, yeah. But yes, it would have been very funny.
Like, where's the box? Ralph had it.
Oh, shit. A PA has to go running after Ralph.
Ralph, come back. Anyway, the twist is we're doing an immunity challenge right here, right now, and then we're voting another person out.
And it's a bad one.
I don't hate it. Like,
They did it in Nicaragua, too, but they did a better version of it with multiple rounds and a lead-up, not just here's all of them in a row, do it in one go. It just feels tacked on, because it is. I don't, we had to have more votes because Redemption Island exists. This did not feel pre-planned to me. This felt like a last-second pivot of, like, we gotta get through these votes.
Yeah, or it shakes things up if Steve wins. I think it's a win-win situation.
Sure.
It either like speeds us up to where we actually get it interesting, or it forces something to be interesting.
Except I disagree. I don't think it's I think it's a lose-lose, because the two options are Steve wins immunity or Steve goes home.
Uh-huh.
The Steve goes home sucks for Steve, and I would argue maybe for the season.
Steve doesn't go home.
Okay, goes to Redemption Island, whatever. Steve gets voted out. We'll say that.
Yeah.
And but if he doesn't, now Steve's maybe in a power position, because you have the last guy left. How many times have we seen the last person left in an alliance be so important, because everyone's looking at that next day? With two people, it's not as urgent. The last person is the one that gets all of those benefits.
Uh-huh.
Maybe he wouldn't have. We'll never know. If Steve wins, then you don't get to see the ways that the Ometepe alliance crumbles and Andrea goes home. There is no moving and shaking.
Sure.
And that's worse than what I think next episode is going to be of all of that moving and shaking.
Okay.
So I actually think it's worse either way.
So you would rather we have Steve do another episode?
I don't know.
Lead him to his death? Or not. Like you said, it's a viable option that now we shake it up.
I think I would have preferred that, actually, because yes, even if Steve ends up going home in that episode, I think that episode can focus so much on what's next. We've seen that before too.
Yeah.
Whether or not Steve stays in the game and that gets kicked the next episode or whatever, I think that's more interesting. Like, the worst time is when there's two people left in the minority alliance post merge.
Sure.
Most of the time.
Anyway, we do a quick immunity challenge. It's a memory game. It's no one's in the headspace for this, so yeah. We're out in the first round. Like, we don't even finish the first round. It is a long round, but in previous iterations, they've finished at least this.
Yeah.
So, in a quick rundown, Philip and Natalie are out first. Grant and Andrea are out second. Steve and Ashley out third. So, Boss and Rob wins immunity in a quite literally like 3-minute immunity challenge.
Yeah.
Hooray.
Okay.
And then we get up and vote. No talk is had. We just vote.
Sure.
And Steve is voted out in a sweep. He gone.
Yep.
Kinda.
Yeah, now there's four people on Redemption Island.
Now we're just stacking up bodies on Redemption Island.
Sure. Just guys being dudes hanging out on Redemption Island.
Hey, guys, want to cuddle? Yeah.
That shelter needs to be bigger.
Your protagonist of the episode, Jared?
Nobody. Nothing happens. I guess it's Steve. The question is like whether or not we get rid of Steve and there's still the leftover blow up from last episode. Yeah, it's a really weak protagonist.
Can I make an off the wall one?
Sure.
One that I don't know that we have before?
Sure.
Jeff.
Oh.
The protagonist Jeff.
I'll say spiritually, but no.
Okay, fine.
I like it being a contestant because you can make an argument that Jeff's the protagonist of every episode.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
He's the narrator. You can't have the narrator be the protagonist.
I disagree.
Well, that's actually, I can think of like five examples that that's not true.
Correct.
He's the one reading the storybook in Princess Bride. He can't be Wesley.
Okay, fine.
Or he shouldn't be.
He shouldn't be.
He is a little bit this season, though.
All right. Jared, anything else you want to say before we shut this down?
I hope it gets better. It can't get worse.
That is bumper.
I shouldn't have said that.
That'll do that.
That'll do that.
That'll do that. That'll do it for this episode of the Survivor Tour to Make Time podcast. Jared, anything you'd like to promote?
I can't remember if I promoted it before. I probably did, but I've been watching more and more Letterkenny. I'm almost all the way through it. I just want to shout it out again because I fucking love it. I have come to the conclusion that it is the closest you can get, at least of things that I've experienced, to watching a Shakespearean comedy at the time that Shakespeare wrote them.
Mm.
Because, like, again, I've said before, like, Shakespeare is not this high thing. Like, a lot of it is, like, dick jokes and just, like, clever wordplay. And all Letterkenny is just 30 minutes an episode of clever wordplay.
Sure.
What about you, Steven?
I am going to promote. If you want to hire me to host your event, go ahead and do that.
You can have the Weird Monopoly Man.
I can be the Weird Monopoly Man. I can be game show host. I got lots of faces here.
He does physically remove his face when he does it.
Anyway, also do your taxes. Like, get your taxes ready.
Yep.
'Tis the time. For my co-host Jared, this is Steven.
My host Steven, this is Jared.
I'm the tax man. I go in and I throw taxes around.
Bye-bye.
I'm the trash man. Bye-bye.